Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with Ray Allen. Ray is producing and engineering our show on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's the 12th of January, a Tuesday, 2016. Hope your week's going pretty good for you so far. We'll begin with our man in the nation's capital, Terry Bracey. Terry's going to preview the State of the Union address tonight, followed by certified financial planner Shelley Fishman, who gives me not a thumbs up, not a thumbs down, but kind of a flat day of the palm on Wall Street. 12:30, what the governor did and didn't say about Arizona education during his State of the Union address, State of the State address, elevating our governor not quite yet to that level. We'll talk with David Safir, who writes about education for the Tucson Weekly. Our live line number 790-2040. Our Facebook page is Bill Buckmaster, and you can follow us at Twitter at Buckmaster Show. Terry Bracey is our expert on Washington and governmental affairs. Terry has enjoyed a long and distinguished career, beginning as a key aide to Congressman Mo Udall. He went on to serve under four presidents of both parties. He's senior partner in the respected government affairs firm of Bracey, Tucker, Brown, and Valenzano, and he represents that firm represents the city of Tucson and the Central Arizona Project, among their many clients. Mr. Bracey joining us now on the live line. Terry, how are you?
Hey, Bill. I think I'm better off than you this time.
Well, hopefully.
Last time I couldn't talk, but you're getting through your cold pretty well.
Well, hopefully it's not too noticeable, but yeah, it is.
No, good job.
Wrapping up the first week of this. I posted on Facebook a few minutes ago about everybody I know either has had it or has it, and based on the response, a lot of people are in the same boat as I am. Hey, I know you're a big basketball fan. The good news for you and all the Wildcat fans, even though the Cats did drop two over in L.A., Coach Miller says now the kids will listen to him, and he doesn't feel really that bad about it. So maybe it will be viewed as a wake-up call.
Well, it was a painful road trip for sure, and I hope that's a low point in the season because I think they really have a good group. And, of course, they've got a great coach. So anyway, you know, you win and you lose, and it's fun to be. Every year Arizona has a competitive team, and that's really what the fun of it is.
It certainly is. The State of the Union address is tonight, and as I recall, State of the Union addresses are usually the last week of January. Is this one earlier than usual? Or?
There are different dates.
Okay.
This is earlier than usual.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure why, but it is. And it's not a bad idea because we need to get the Congress up and going and seeing if we can get anything through at all this year. We might get a trade agreement, possibly, and we might get something I'm very interested in, which is criminal justice reform. So those are the two hopeful things. But in terms of the speech tonight, and I think the news has sort of identified it, the president's really, not much is going to really emerge from a set of policy suggestions. And he's going to talk in a thematic way, although there will be a couple of big new initiatives in the medical research front, particularly regarding cancer, that are worth keeping your eye out for. But the importance of the speech, I think, will be the themes the president lays out as the Democratic program for the years ahead. In contrast to conservatives who want to reduce the size and impact of government, Obama's a classic liberal, you know, who sees government that leads society. And he'll propose some goals like conquering cancer or in the next decade, exploring space, providing education for everyone, and sharply maybe limiting America's war making in the future. It'll be a JFK kind of vision speech.
Well, what about the two kind of hot button issues right now, guns and immigration, Terry?
He's expected to address both at length and to do so in quite a partisan manner. He believes no American should vote for a candidate who does not agree with, quote, reasonable gun control. And he symbolizes this by leaving a seat open for all those who died up in the section that Michelle hosts in his personal box tonight. He'll also lay out his immigration plans and reach for some kind of national consensus, which is really avoided him.
Well, you kind of wonder if these ideas will really go anywhere.
Probably not in this Congress, Bill, but in the same way that Speaker Ryan's extensive platform that he's after will not be greeted well at the White House.
So, Terry, then what is the point?
Well, the speech will actually kick off a potentially important dialogue between the president and the House Republicans about more substantive plans if they should win the presidency. As we know, the presidential contest really is, there's been a lot of shouting and screaming, but very few detailed plans about what the candidates, maybe with the exception of Senator Sanders, with what the candidates would do with the machinery of government. How do you round up 11 million undocumented immigrants and send them home? How do you actually do away with ISIS? Is that possible? If you kill Obamacare, what do you replace it with? What's the deal? You know, who will pay for the tax cuts candidates are proposing? Who will be the winners and losers?
Well, those are all good questions. And then you wonder, what is Speaker Ryan? What are his key ideas?
Well, I'll give you some. He wants to reduce the top income tax rate from 39% to 25%. He wants to cut the corporate rate from 35% to 25%. To pay for this, he'd cut what he believes is an overblown federal food stamp program and cut education at the federal level. He wants to turn Medicaid and other poverty programs into block grants to be managed by the states, not the federal government. Another one, he wants to raise retirement age for Social Security. Another one, he wants to phase out the minimum wage, but sharply increase the earned income tax credit, which subsidizes the poor. So he has got some amazing ideas.
Well, oh, that's a real mouthful. It's a very ambitious set of ideals that he has set out for.
Well, it is, but, you know, Ryan has thought through this for a long time. He was part of what was known as the Conservative Opportunity Agenda, which was started by the late Jack Kemp. And offering up these big ideas, he'll hope to counter the vision that the president will lay out tonight, which will be a Democratic one, and I think very interesting as well.
Is there any chance that we might see some dialogue during this presidential year, or pretty much folks have, you know, the agendas are set? It's going to be a difficult Congress, certainly.
Yeah, it's the dialogue, Bill, will go from the Capitol Hill to the White House. The House Republicans will pass these bills, publicize the bills, and then the president, in just a similarly visible way, will knock them down and tell the country why it's doing that. And, of course, you know, some people, just as a final note, are saying with Speaker Ryan, you know, kind of injecting himself in this way into the presidential race. Is he really, got a campaign going here? And he bristles when people mention it, but you know, it's like Mo Udall once said, in Washington there's a disease called presidentialitis. Only cure is embalming fluid.
Well, it would be interesting to see the State of the Union for what this, of course, being President Obama's last State of the Union address, and we'll see how it is received. But this has been quite, I'm sure you've been watching very closely as the Republicans are pretty much, the latest polls indicate that Trump and Ted Cruz have actually increased their leads over Mr. Rubio, Marco Rubio. So, of course, no votes have been cast yet, but it is interesting to see that the Trump and Cruz lead continues to expand.
Well, we've talked about this, and Of course, both you and I were surprised at the strength of the conservative thrust represented by Cruz and Trump. But you know, as time has gone on, it's apparent that the majority of the Republican primary voters lie well in the conservative range. And now, you know, I think Trump continues to be the person to watch. I know that Trump has this interesting approach, which is that everyone who starts coming up, he knocks them down one by one. Now, the latest with Cruz, now that Cruz is surging in Iowa and some other places, all of a sudden the new birther issue yeah. is introduced. And frankly, it's being taken seriously by a lot of legal scholars. There was a long editorial in the Washington Post today by a law school professor who alleged that he does not meet the standard by the Constitution. And this is, while he says it's settled law that he is indeed a naturalized citizen, this article says that this has never really been tested by the court. And that if you look to the Constitution itself, it says that the President of the United States has to be born in this country. So, you know, those who have kind of chased President Obama with this issue for years now find it at their own doorstep. How interesting is politics?
All right. Terry Bracey, thank you very much. Hope you have a great week. Thanks, Terry.
Get well, Bill.
Thanks a lot. 12:16 on the Buckmaster Show. Terry Bracey with us from Washington. And now Shelley Fishman with us from Tucson right after this. Pedestrian projects funded by the Regional Transportation Authority are now under construction at Treat Avenue and Broadway Boulevard and Craycroft Road in Fort Lowell Park. The crosswalk improvements provide added pedestrian safety. More than 37 high-intensity activated crosswalks have been funded by the RTA to date. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. Our business and technology section takes a different look at the economy from the Mises Institute, the Taxpayers Protection Alliance, Mises Global Economic Trend Analysis, and the Daily Bell. It is business and technology news from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
Shelly Fishman is a certified financial planner professional. The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
We would recommend that that financial advisor be the gentleman who is seated to my left here in studio, Mr. Shelly Fishman. Hello, Shell.
I am well, Bill. I know you're not.
Well, yeah. It's day six or so, and Ray's smiling over there. Ray's had it already. He knows. He's feeling a little better, and he's in day number, about number 10 or 11 with his cold. But anyway... China has given the United States a cold.
Yes, that's a great way of putting it. What's happened since the first of the year, and actually the last couple of months of last year as well, is that the Chinese economy, in trying to adjust where their economy is going, has reverberated through the rest of the world economy in ways that I think nobody quite anticipated. We're down not in official pullback territory, and we've got about 6%. A formal correction is 10%. But this has taken the U.S. economy and the U.S. markets by surprise at how quickly small changes in what China was doing in terms of devaluing their currency have reverberated through the world economies and certainly the markets, which are leading indicators.
It has cost investors in this country what China has done, billions of dollars.
Yes, absolutely. And you think, well, it's really not fair. How can a foreign government, a foreign economy, affect so much of what U.S. investors are involved in, especially since U.S. companies, U.S. investors are typically not invested in the Chinese markets. So that, or if they have investment, it's very small. So even though the Chinese markets really have receded considerably, you'd say, well, that's not going to affect U.S. investors. But what's happened is what the Chinese have done to try to correct their situation in terms of manufacturing output and being able to export their products to the rest of the world while they're trying as a country to grow a middle class into a consumer-based economy. What's happened is that has reverberated through markets throughout the world. Now, the Europeans have withstood it pretty well, but what you've seen here in this country is a reaction that, quite frankly, has surprised most of the analysts.
But China is so important, and perhaps you could explain why it is so important.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting.
And to manufacture.
I heard an analysis of this, so I'm gonna try to repeat this. I wasn't writing it down as
okay,
I was.
Okay, we'll just summarize it.
But if you take, first of all, you have to understand that China is the second or maybe the first largest economy in the world. They were growing at 12% a year. The rest of the world was growing at 2% a year. So here's China trying to export, because it was an export-based economy, export their goods and services growing at 12% a year to a world that could only absorb 2% growth. Now you see what's going on as the Chinese were essentially flooding the market with their goods. The prices kept dropping and dropping and dropping because of supply and demand. Demand was not high enough to meet their excessive supply. And at some point, all of that reduced or lowered prices for just about everything affected commodities and affected everything. So we see it in oil prices. We see it in the prices of steel and iron and other durables. We see it in the price of things that the Chinese have produced very effectively, like television sets, washing machines, and that kind of thing. So that is driving prices way, way down. When prices are that low, what happens, of course, is the manufacturers who compete with China have to lower their prices. So what we've seen then is the strengthening of the U.S. dollar against other currencies, and the difficulty that U.S. manufacturers are now having in filling their factories and in filling our ability to continue to produce goods that the rest of the world can afford to buy. And we're seeing that now in some of these manufacturing numbers. The auto industry seems to be doing fine, but we're seeing inventories grow in the manufacturing sector. We just had a very, very good employment number. And you say, well, what's that all about? It's about the durability of our economy and how steady we seem to be moving in a positive direction. But this is a real headwind. It's a fundamental change in the world economy. And until China figures out how to do this without having a deleterious or damaging effect on the rest of the world, we're going to see, especially in an election year, we're going to see this continued volatility throughout the year. I think we'll be okay. I think we're going to get some growth from where we started the year by the end of the year. But this is a very, in some ways, alarming kind of situation. And we have yet to figure out quite how to deal with it.
Yes, it is alarming because before all of this happened, all of the economic forecasts, year-end forecasts, before all this happened with China, had indicated the prediction would be a flat year.
Flat to slightly positive.
Positive.
This isn't new information, okay. Bill. I mean, we've known that the Chinese economy was trying to change to a consumer-driven economy, and that in doing so, there were going to be dislocations that the rest of the world would feel. What we didn't understand, I think, was how precipitous it would be and how it would happen the definition of precipitous, kind of all at once at the beginning of the year. Hopefully we'll get this behind us. The Chinese will understand that it doesn't work to their advantage for the rest of the world to be suffering this way, the rest of the markets to be suffering this way. The Europeans seem to be doing okay. They've held pretty steady. I worry about, of course, there were other things going on, especially in Asia with the North Koreans. And continued sluggishness in the Japanese economy. What we're seeing, of course, at the same time is the Fed and other central banks backing away from stimulus because they thought, well, we've kind of done what we needed to do. So all of these things at once are creating this, you know, confluence of headwinds that the U.S. markets are now dealing with. And it's no fun to watch.
Oh, so hopefully we will ride this out. And,
oh, I think so, yes. Yeah.
Shelley Fishman, if people would like to get a hold of you and chat with you about their particular individual situation, because let's face it, every individual has a different financial situation.
Well, right. So buckmastershow.com and then just hit the link to my website. But what is most important for people who might be feeling panicky right now is to talk to their advisors, because really our role as advisors is you know, to help you balance and allocate and pick stocks and you know, pick investments. But our most important role is to help you not do stupid things.
Yeah.
And that is, it is so important that people in my profession exert a calming influence right now over people who are seeing some fundamental changes and worrying about their portfolios and have some, you know, having some propensity to act rashly or foolishly when they shouldn't.
All right, Shelley Fishman, Certified Financial Planner. You can find out more about Shelley on my website, buckmastershow.com. Just click on the link. That will get you to Shelley. You hopefully make a phone call. Shelley will take the call and connect with this fine financial mind. Thank you very much, Shelley.
Thank you, Bill, and feel better.
I hope so. 12:30 on Buckmaster.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of LPL Financial or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is an LPL Financial Planner. Shelley can be reached at 520-940-0884 or at his website, shelleyfishman.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Wednesday at noon for a newsmaker interview with Pima Community College Chancellor Lee Lambert, plus State Senator Andrea D'Alessandro. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice with live streaming podcasts and our archive at buckmastershow.com. Back to the Buckmaster Show. My name is Bill Buckmaster. Ray Allen is producing the show. And Ray, we had a nice Facebook comment yesterday, right at the end of the show, saying they like some of the new bumper music that we are introducing here. And we figured, you know, after 5 years, we're now into the sixth year of the show. It's time to have some new bumper music. So that was a little bit of Steely Dan getting us going here into the second half hour of the program. And once a month, one of our 20 or so, I think we've got 24 contributors to this program, and he contributes on education, and he is David Safir. David writes in the TucsonWeekly.com, the section they call The Range, because it covers such a wide range of topics.
It is indeed. Food and music, and I do education, and Jim Ninsel and others put in all kinds of new stuff. It really covers a lot.
Well, it's very serendipitous to have you on the program today, because yesterday was the State of the State address by Governor Doug Ducey, and a lot of people were looking to find out what the governor had on his agenda for education. And from what I understand, I did not hear the whole speech, but from what I read, he talked a little bit about higher education and maybe putting a little more money into it, no specifics. And what did he say specifically about overall education on the lower grade levels?
Well, the overview, Bill, is that it was a pretty small ball state of the state. In other words, he took a lot of specific items, a lot of which cost no money or little money, and stayed away from big money items. And the only two that had money attached to them in any significant amount were his tax cuts, which has a negative money flowing into the state. And that's the big deal. That's his primary. And the other is he touted the $3 billion over 10 years that he wants to spend on schools. And he talked about that as being monumental. But the fact is, that's not really a budget item for the state, because most of that is coming out of money that isn't state money. It's out of state land trust money. So really, he's preserving his surplus to pay down taxes. And that's his idea. And because of that, if he wants to pay down taxes, he's not going to have much left for anything else. So there's very little new money that he talked about that's involved in K-12 education. And I should say, by the way, that he knows very well that they cut $98 million from higher education, from the universities. So if you listen to his speech, he spends about 5 minutes talking about the great universities we have, wonderful universities, great leadership, great programs, going into space, this, that, and the other thing, and then moving on, and never mentioned a money issue at all there. So that was, he was dodging that. He was trying to stay away from any big hot button issues.
And the folks at the Board of Regents, which oversee the three state universities, had kind of a very lukewarm reaction to the governor's address yesterday.
Well, I would, if somebody patted me on the back and gave me a lollipop but no money, I would have a lukewarm reaction too. Well, thanks. I appreciate the fact you think we're doing a better job, but how about a little bit more money so we could do a better job, or lower student tuition so it's not so onerous and students don't have to take out so many loans. It really was, he didn't want to spend any money because he does want those tax cuts. And he said tax cuts this year, tax cuts the next year, tax cuts the next year. That's the point he made. And if there was anything that was the central focus, you know, if you looked at the Star yesterday, the big banner headline at the top of the front page was sentencing reform in state of the state message. Not a word, nothing but crickets. That was supposed to be his big out there kind of a subject. And all he talked about was taking care of stopping recidivism and helping people who have drug problems and things like that, but nothing about sentencing reform. He avoided anything that was controversial or a large issue.
That's very curious. So that wound up on the cutting room floor, as they say, before.
And very at the very last minute, because he had just talked about to Howard Fisher about it, you know, the the Times reporter or the state political reporter, and he talked to people at the Republic because they all talked about it. And he went into how we really have to reduce the level of prison population and stop adding people. And he went into detail, and then it was gone. And you can draw a lot of conclusions about why it was gone, I guess.
Yeah, you certainly can. Maybe some of his advisors said, no, hold off on that. But who knows? 790-2040, if you would like to join in the conversation. David Safier is here. So as far as the dipping into the state trust money for the election coming up,
well, you know, there's going to be an election. It's in May, I'm pretty sure.
It is May, second week of May.
Okay. And the whole idea here is that the voters have to decide whether the voters are willing to take money from a land trust that's dedicated to education, most of it, that's supposed to go on in perpetuity, and borrow from later years, in a sense, to pay for this year. And it's a very easy fix for someone who's trying not to spend any more money, who wants to keep the budget as small as it is, to dip into somebody else's money. And, you know, I remember I had some friends who had trust funds when they were kids, and they were very bitter because they would have one parent who would say, okay, I'm buying shoes out of the trust fund, and your food's coming out of the trust fund, and the and part of the rent is coming out of the trust. The kids didn't know this was going on. And then when they came of age, I'm sorry, there's no money in the trust fund. Here are all the receipts. Well, in a sense, not quite as much, but in a sense, Doug Ducey and the Republican members of the legislature are doing something similar. They're saying, we're going to give you your money early, but we're not going to give you any of the state money because they want to keep that budget as low as possible. So,
does the governor want to use some of the money for charter schools? Did that come up during the
It did, and it did speech in kind of a backhanded fashion. But now, this is money that was already budgeted. There's, I believe it's $24 million it was budgeted. And what he wants to do, and he talked about that dealing with loan agencies, is he wants charter schools to be able to get better rates when they get loans to build schools. And the way you get a better rate is lower the risk. And the way you lower the risk is just like a father who will sign on his son's loan, right, because he can guarantee it. Well, that $24 million is supposed to be guaranteeing the loans for the charter schools, which means that if they're guaranteed, it costs less in interest, right, because it's a safer loan. The problem with that is, what if a charter school folds and has no money? Who picks up the tab? Well, it comes out of the state's $24 million. So the risk goes from the school over to the state fund. And that's the one thing he talked about charters specifically.
You posted in the Tucson Weekly today, you said deadbeat dads was touched on in the state of the state address. And then in a way, you said that the governor and the leadership are being deadbeat dads when it comes to education.
Well, I decided when I heard that part that I would turn that around on Ducey and his compatriots in the legislature. He talked about with deadbeat dads that he was going to put a hashtag, you know, on Twitter. He's going to put their names, hashtag deadbeat, and let people know that these people haven't paid up. And I thought, you haven't paid up the last 4 years. Now, Ducey wasn't governor, but the people who are running the show haven't paid up to schools in the last 4 years. And the court said you have to pay up. And now you're saying, well, we're not going to pay those last 4 years. And we'll start paying this now, but it really won't be our money. It's the trust money. And, oh, by the way, we're not making the decision. It's going to have to be the voters who vote for it. And to put the cap on this, it's not going to happen for a year. So I said, if any parent said that to a judge, that that's what they were going to do to pay their child support, the judge would roll their eyes, bang the gavel, and say, uh-uh. So I think that they qualify under Ducey's definition of deadbeat dad when it comes to education.
All right, David Safir will stick around for another segment, 790-2040. We'll talk about TUSD and desegregation. That'll be coming up in our final segment of this show on this Tuesday. But first, I want to tell you about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson, to a great experience, completely different. It's a great part of the Southwest. Certainly a great part of Southwest New Mexico to visit. Silver City, a very historic area, and there's lots of hiking and recreation activities available for you, and there are plenty of great places to stay, like Agave Ridge Retreat and Cottage of Whispering Canyon. You can find out more on their website, Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org. Back right after this.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha. Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. Not a very good singer, am I? But you know what? Cockroaches aren't a pleasant subject, and we had them. And I called my friend Shelby Hawkins over at Five Star Termite and Pest Control, and guess what? No more cockroaches. Adios, cucaracha. Hasta mañana. No más.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering on its promises with more than 660 completed transportation improvements, pedestrian and bicycle safety upgrades, new sidewalks and bike lanes, as well as roadway transit and traffic signal technology improvements are helping people and goods move across our region. The RTA and its member jurisdictions are working together to offer you more options. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Business owners and managers, upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show as we push toward 12:48. On this Tuesday afternoon, David Safir is here. David writes and blogs about education at Tucson Weekly, the Range column. It's tucsonweekly.com.
And let's go to the live line, 790-2040, 790-2040, and we will be hearing from Steve momentarily. Go ahead, Ray. We'll put Steve up. Go ahead, Steve.
Hello, how you doing?
Hey, you're doing well.
Good. I just have a comment. I'm not worried about the colleges. I'm worried about the K through 12. I have a daughter who's in fourth grade. You have to put the money in that and worry about the colleges later. If the kids get good educations, they can earn scholarships. They can do their, and the colleges can cut a lot of fat and deal with that later on. But right now, K through 12 needs all the money, and forget, I don't want to hear about the colleges, because there's so many other opportunities in life, Air Force, Navy, all the different kinds of things, scholarships. So I did my time in the Air Force. I mean, everybody can figure out a way to get a career. College universities are not always it. My wife graduated from college. She got a great career. But the thing is, there's different ways to be able to obtain a college degree.
Okay.
Well, I'm an old K-12 teacher. I taught high school English, and I love K-12 dearly, and close to my heart is the funding for that as opposed to the universities. But I really think, to some extent, it's a false choice, and it's a choice that we're being given, because there's a pretense that there's no way that the budget can have any more money than it does and that we're starving it. Well, if there's money for tax cuts, there's money for education on both levels. So I would rather we have a both-and situation, especially when $300 million a year has been taken from the K-12 schools and $98 million was taken last year from the universities. That means that money was stolen away, taken away, and should be replaced. That's just to get even. That's not to get any extra money. So I appreciate the comment, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Steve called us at 790-2040. If you would like to join in the conversation, give us a call. David, there's been a couple of articles about desegregation and TUSD. Front page article, I don't know if it was front page, but it was in the first section today of the Star. Deseg Master dislikes 712 plan at Sabino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a big issue. What happens is the district is pushing for three or four schools, maybe five schools, to have some changes in terms of whether they are 9 through 12 like Sabino is now, or actually includes a middle school, or increase the number of grades. And before they can do something like that, they have to ask the special master who's overseeing desegregation in TUSD, because if he decides that it is going to go on the wrong way, that it's going to increase segregation, he can literally say, no, it won't happen. And he believes that the Sabino plan, as it's written right now, will increase segregation. So he's telling the judge, this is the special master, telling the judge he doesn't think that should go through. And it's, I'll tell you, Bill, I am trying to learn more about the desegregation in TUSD. I've been reading histories about it. I've actually been going back in the newspapers, you know, in the archives of newspapers, reading about it. I've been Googling districts all over the country to see if anybody has cracked this nut, if anyone has solved it. And the answer is, it doesn't seem like there are any terrific models to make this appreciably better. And that puts TUSD in a very, very difficult situation.
Yeah, how do you govern if you're the TUSD governing board when you've got this judge that you must answer to?
Well, it's a very, very difficult situation. Listen, it happens. You know, sometimes people are under court orders to do things, and you have to pay attention to that. Today, also in the paper, board member Mark Stegeman wrote something and basically said, listen, we've got the rule of law, which is his DSEG order, and we've got to follow it. And they're quibbles with what he said. There are some things I am concerned about, but basically he's right about that. It just makes it very difficult. Listen, I'm an educator. So when I think of being an educator and I think of a district, I think of the multiple things that a district does. First of all, it's got to teach the kids. It's got to teach the kids reading and writing and math and history and science and the arts and all those things that are basically academic. But it's got to deal with the social aspect, too, how kids interact with other kids and how to behave with other people. And also in a place like Tucson, you've got this situation where we've got a diverse population, approximately 60% Hispanic, about 40% mainly Anglo, some other groups represented as well. And every decent study I've seen said that kids tend to do better, the same kids tend to do better if they're in a more diverse situation, so long as the situation does a good job of education. So we should be doing that, but it is so difficult. Should that be the one primary focus of the district? And what if that harms other aspects of the district? It has me confounded. It has me very confused, and there's no right answer to this that I know.
And Dr. Stegeman was responding to previous op-ed pieces from two board members, Adelita Grijalva and Crystal Ann Foster, had weighed in on this.
Mm-hmm. And while I usually find myself on the same side as Foster and Grijalva, in this case, I thought that both of their op-eds were weak. I thought that they were trying to rationalize something and not go at it straightforwardly. It's very difficult. If your job is, they've got these magnet schools, and the purpose of a magnet school under desegregation is, like a magnet, to draw kids, mainly these are Hispanic majority schools, heavily Hispanic majority, draw Anglo kids to the schools by having special programs. Well, they have special money for that. There's deseg money. So if they're not drawing the kids, they're failing at deseg. But what if they're actually giving terrific education to the kids who are there, even if they're not drawing more kids? And that's kind of what Foster and Grijalva were saying. But you can't argue, listen, we're using deseg money to give undesegregated schools, segregated schools. We're giving using that money to give them great education. The answer is, you've got to use it for desegregation. That's legally what the money's for.
40 years this has been going on?
It's been going on for 40 years.
And I think it's the longest running deseg case in the United States.
I can't say that for sure. It is something I learned recently, is that there are more than a dozen districts in the state that actually have desegregation money, but only two of them are actively, like TUSD, in the middle of deseg litigation. So we're not alone. It's not the only district by far, though we're the one that we always hear about.
And whether or not we'll be getting off anytime soon, who knows?
You know, that's the judge's decision. I'll tell you something else I found recently that really surprised me. Twice, TUSD was given the opportunity to get off the deseg regulation. They would have been able to keep funding it with the deseg money, but they wouldn't be under the regulation. And both times, for some reason, either they or the people who are suing the district over desegregation turned it down. So there actually have been times when the court said, listen, we're going to just get out of the way here. But in both cases, they decided, the district or the people who are suing decided not to.
And Dr. Stegeman, who was on our show on Thursday, once again made his appeal to sit down over coffee with a couple of the board members, namely Adelita Grijalva and Cam Juarez, perhaps, and Crystal Ann Foster. He said he just wants to talk.
He personally, Mr. Stegeman, wants to talk with him.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't say much about that. One thing I'll say is that Mark Stegeman, who I've known for a number of years and watched carefully while he's on the board, is a pretty cantankerous guy who's got his own opinions and doesn't give easily. And when he was in the majority, especially with the Mexican-American studies, if anybody remembers that, he was very adamant and very rock hard in his positions. Now he's in the minority, and he's saying, let's talk a little bit more. You know, I'm not accusing him alone of politics, because everybody plays politics with the school district. But definitely when he says something like that, and with his op-ed, for all the fact that he makes some excellent points, there's a political undercurrent to it, tweaking the majority and to some extent tweaking Superintendent Sanchez as well.
All right, in the remaining minute or so, the recent survey finds strong support for education issues in Arizona. That shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone.
No, it isn't, and I hope that it becomes a strong issue. I don't know if people saw the article about the Democrats in the legislature who held their own press conference and said, this is what we want for education, before Ducey's State of the State address. And so I'm hoping to see more fireworks. And to be honest, on the blog, on the range, I'm planning to be one of the people who is trying to light the fire under people to get more funding for education.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if the school superintendent actually endorses the election coming up in May. Right now, she
that
has
is
not
interesting.
Made,
most
made up
most
her mind.
Superintendents and even the union are endorsing Proposition 1, 2, 3 because even though they don't love what's right. there, they need the money. And I have to admit, Bill, I'm in their camp too. I cannot deny the schools that money, even if I have to hold my nose when I vote for
okay.
it.
Okay. David Safir, we'll look for your work at TucsonWeekly.com in the Range column. There's a column that has been posted today talking about all of this. David, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Coming up this afternoon, 4 Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw, 4 to 5 each afternoon. Ray Allen will be on the other side of the glass for that show as well. Then in the morning, we do 4 hours of talk here at KVOI. Wake Up Tucson 6 to 8, the Daily Double with Christy Simone and a different guest host every day. And then we close out that 4 hours of talk from 9 to 10 with Sean McCluskey. I come back for the 12:04 midday edition of Buckmaster. I'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll be talking with PCC Chancellor Lee Lambert. And also, State Senator D'Alessandro will join us and our nutrition reporter, Jack Challum. That's tomorrow on Buckmaster. Till then, have a great afternoon and evening.